Good evening, everybody. You're listening to Pigtails Radio on WDRT, Viroqua. So hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. I'm Paul and this is Pigtails Radio. We're here in our new dedicated time slot of Wednesdays. We're going to be on Wednesdays now. Some of you might have heard me on Tuesday nights. And we're switching over to Wednesday. And I'm excited about that because it's going to be every Wednesday. And, you know, really looking forward to it. The format of this program is, you know, we just play a lot of interesting music from across different timescales and genres, but that all kind of works together, and it's maybe stuff you haven't heard in a while or at all. And that's the plan. That first number I played was from Freddy Johnston's great 1994 record, This Perfect World, and that was the title track from that record. It's a great record, and one of the reasons why I played that one today is because Freddy is going to be in town this weekend playing at the Fortney. He'll be playing in the lounge there at the Fortney from 6 to 7:30 on Saturday night. That's the 28th, which is a perfect time to go have a cocktail or two and hear some absolutely great music. So I've been a big fan of Freddy's for a long time, and you know, I thought I would take this opportunity here on my inaugural Wednesday night show to highlight some of Freddy's great tunes and to you know, share the conversation that I had with him. So without further ado, let's hear from Freddy Johnston. So hey, Freddy.
hey there, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing great.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Looking forward to the show.
Yeah, totally. I guess, you know, one of my first questions is, what brings you through the Driftless?
Well, every year I do the Parkway Theater in Minneapolis and Fitzgerald's in Berwyn. And
oh, sure.
Usually also Madison or Green Bay in between, but this year I'm doing Rockford, Illinois.
Oh,
at,
yeah.
At Miles Nielsen's bar.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's on, and so Baroque was on the way, and it's my buddy Butch Vig's hometown. So I've got to represent myself in V Town.
Yeah, and you're playing at the Fortney.
Yeah,
which is a sweet little spot. Okay, so back in the 90s, let's go back for a second here. Can You Fly in This Perfect World? You know, when I discovered those records, I think it's interesting how sometimes a record, at least to my ears, will have like it's really seems like you had your finger on the pulse of a certain zeitgeist at the time. You know, I just thought it was real relatable.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I do know that by now, like I said, both of us have been doing it for a while. I was a different person, like everyone was.
Sure.
And I was much more, I don't know what, just not, I was learning. I was actually, went from my day job to a major label deal, basically, almost, you know. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn all this stuff about how to record and how to be an artist and let go in the studio, and it made making the records really hard. I'm glad they came across.
Oh, yeah.
And then later on, then I learned that all that was really, I kept thinking, like, I've got to do this amazing record for myself, you know, to prove it to myself. And then I realized it's not for me, man. You know, it's because the importance that people attach to the albums, you know, as you were saying, is way beyond me. And I've learned that through the years. It's very rewarding, hugely rewarding, first of all, and also a real responsibility, you know, that people have come to me and, you know, in tears, like, you know, my someone who's not here anymore, this, you know, that This Perfect World was their favorite record and so forth.
Yeah.
So really, I take it very seriously. Anybody would have to, and so that particular record has that relationship, but to folks, or people have that relationship to This Perfect World. I've heard people say now repeatedly, like different people, which I've never heard, and I have to, you know, hand it to Butch Vig for producing such a beautiful record. But people have said, I wore out a couple CDs of that record. It's like, how do you wear out a freaking CD? You know? so it certainly has gotten me further in the world than the other albums, but that doesn't mean that all my favorite songs that I wrote, because, you know, you have your own favorites, are mainly on other records.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter because it's really, really, truly about what the folks like, and that has become very, you know, very, like I said, very clear and very comforting. You know, in my older age here, I have a week off here in Phoenix. I'm doing this. It's kind of weird. Just my friends loan me their house, and it's sort of like I haven't done it for a while. A monastic retreat to just write songs and draw pictures. You know, and. It's really, it's been good, and I really want to do it for the very reason I said. The folks on my, I do a webcast every Tuesday, and I get notes from folks, and they just really take it seriously, you know. So I have to take it, my song seriously. I can't be like, yeah, I like doing this sometimes. No, this is what I do to them, and they would. They're dying to hear a new song, for example. That kind of, I'm being very sincere when I say, the further along I go with this, the more I realize I'm doing it for other people. But I have this great thing with these fans who really love me, support me, and want to see me make music. Anyway, that's a real thing.
I know I got a bad reputation, and it isn't just talk, talk, talk. If I could only give you everything, you know I haven't got. I couldn't have one conversation if it wasn't for the lies, lies, lies. And still I wanna tell you. Tell me who to love. Been breaking down. Do you want me now? Do you want me now? Suddenly I'm down on Herald Square. Looking in the crowd, your face is everywhere. Just turning around. Do you want me now? Do you want me now? Been breaking down.
Well, and it's interesting. It's you know, I've thought the same thing about writers, you know, authors, that you're putting together something that's personal. Mm-hmm. It's you. It's coming from you. You know, you're struggling with it. And really, the entire meaning and everything is out of your hands in a sense. You know, I mean, that meaning
kind of,
is created in that space
is.
In
that,
between
that's
the reader
that's
and
right.
the listener sense to it.
Yeah, and that applies to maybe like the overall, you know, vibe or psychological take of the meaning of the song, or the actual literal meaning of the lyrics. Because I remember Butch saying, like, Freddie, they're going to make up their own story. Just write some cool lyrics. And, you know, but I often, or pretty much always, though I'm getting back the other way, that's how I used to write songs. If I like the cool lyrics, they stay.
Yeah.
Now I got to finish the story. And that's a natural thing to do, you know, as a progression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in writing these new songs, like I was just before the interview, that's what I was doing. I'm trying to get back to that, to just write some cool lines,
mm-hmm.
leave it, you know, and it's a weird full circle thing to come back to what I did in the 20s, where I just don't give a shit what the meaning is, because I was too young and dumb to know what meaning even was. Just like, this sounds cool.
Yeah.
But now I realize, like, the highest achievement, of course, and it always will be, is a song that you know what it's about, and they know what it's about, and it transcends and so forth. Actually, I've written a couple of those, so I'm good with that. I've written some songs that I really like, I stand behind, you know?
Yeah.
And so now on these new ones, I'm like, come on, just get these freaking words up.
Which
I tell
songs
the story
you...
a lot, but it's a valuable. When I was working with T-Bone Burnett,
okay,
I couldn't get some lyrics done, you know, to the song that I'm glad that I stuck with it and got them done.
Yeah,
but I remember
him
saying, like, Freddie, can't you just go out there, and in a spirit of bravery and humility and love, just sing what's in your heart to your fans, it just stunned me with the incredible challenge of that.
I totally get
And it was something that a really, you know, it's a real artistic challenge. And I was like, no, sir, I gotta have a half hour to finish these. But the point of all that is like, that is a good thing to say to yourself. Can't you just, you know, as a writer of words or a writer of music or anything, like, or painters, can't you just give this thing away right now, you know?
Yeah, just open, be an open conduit.
Put it down, you know.
Yeah, well, that's that record that T-Bone produced, Blue Days and Black Nights. That's a great record too. I think that's just a seamless and gorgeous record, and
that's one of the most expensive art records ever made. I'll tell you, man. Jesus,
really?
I'll never pay that thing off. it was really recorded like it was supposed to be a hit record, you know, like the way the money was spent in LA and the studios, and it was beautiful. Hey, I loved it. I'll never pay it back.
It's a brilliant record.
It really paid off, because some of those recordings, a lot of them are live recordings, basically with a couple of overdubs, are just magical because they're live.
Yeah,
you know, and it's really brave and hard to do that.
It's really beautiful too. I mean, it's the sound of the record is lush and gorgeous.
It's kind of, I agree with you. It's kind of a thing where the combination of the studios, I mean, to get really dweeby, but the studios that had the old Ampex 24 tracks,
yeah,
which we A-B'd, and it was like they were the best sounding thing we ever heard, starting with that, and then this mastering guy named Paul Gastwerk and then T-Bone Burnett. It was like, yeah, that's kind of like, that's a sound, man.
Side. a sailor's life at my unnamed craft. Ignore it and collect my coins for hauling trash. And every night where the sea goes deep, I drop sail.
Well, but, yeah, but back sound. To Butch, you know, Butch's record is really a beautiful, pristine sound. I think that for him, like it was a real departure for him. He wanted to do that. It was the first non-heavy record, I think, that he'd done.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that means a lot to me. That he, but I was his first attempt to do that, and a successful attempt, obviously.
Never gonna change.
Well, and I saw that that there's a vinyl reissue of Can You Fly that just came out this year.
Yeah, that came out last summer on my current manager. My manager, but he's new to me for a year. That's why I say current, but my manager, period, is Len Fico. He works with the Smithereens and a lot of other bands, but he has a label, Sunset Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's who I will put out my next singles on.
Well, the remaster of that sounds really, really nice. I think it's a really nice remaster.
I totally agree. I mean, there's nothing. I'm a vinyl fan.
And it's also really hard to, when we were all listening to vinyl, you'd sit down and put a side on and sit there with the cover in your hand, and listen,
mm-hmm.
And look at it and read the liner notes again and go, and all that stuff. And now it's like you hear something on Spotify, you want to know who it is or who's playing pedal steel on that tune or whatever, Can't find it anywhere, and you got to go out elsewhere on the internet. No, they have very little information about anything. Mm-hmm. It's just that's the tune, that's it.
Well, I will say that I have to agree with you on the sound quality. I just got all my stereo stuff kind of out of the basement in New Jersey and set it up again. I have a tube, amp and these hi-fi speakers.
Sure.
And I plugged in my computer. And I was like, whoa, because it was revealing the way that these MP3s were sounding.
Yeah,
and then
I
put a CD in. It was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It just like it was. It took a good stereo to really reveal.
Yeah, exactly.
That. But I would say on that end, that first is unavoidable.
Yeah.
So it sucks to have your music just taken from you, and they give you a penny every 10 years. I mean, that's just Spotify.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But people listen to them. But in general, that's the whole point that I have to say. Like, it makes easier for people to listen. So it's like, okay, here's my art. Take it, listen, because it really is. You want them to listen, and so Spotify, of course, has
at the end of the day, that's
gotten me many more fans. And in addition, I would say, as far as listening to music, if it was all like high quality, like Apple Lossless or something on every stream. Then that's how I like to listen to music. If I have a song in my head, I have to hear it right now.
No tears can reach me while I know tonight, my cold little one. Has your dream begun? She has gone.
You know, we were talking about how a couple things. You know, you mentioned that the cover band is kind of was doing some homage to the 70s stuff, and then your 2022 release, Back on the Road to You.
Yes, that
has a kind of a 70s vibe in some ways on it, I think. But it's interesting. You know, I laughed about one of the lines. There was in the song "Trying to Move On." You know, the character loses their glasses at the airport, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, well, that contrasts that to This Perfect World, where you have a character who wakes up wrapped in a torn down curtain, you know?
Well, now, and that's a very true thing to say that, because I have been working on lyrics just today, as I said, mm-hmm. and the song I've been working on is incredibly sad, and I don't know if I can even finish it. But I am making it less sad actively, because I can't go there anymore. If that makes any sense. It's like in the past I was younger and I didn't know what it really, really really felt like for those characters, and now I just can't do it. So these songs are trying to get away from that, because there were several songs on the record, like "Darlin'" is very pointed, but I really feel like. That, like, the three new songs I have that I'm going to do as singles, none of them are what you'd call a sad song, you know? And I think that's really because I changed, you know?
Yeah.
I wrote these sad songs often without having the... And then, well, I will say this, and this is just me making it up, I'm sure, because people kind of make up patterns in their life, you know, when they see patterns where they're maybe art. But I wrote a lot of songs that I then lived out,
yeah.
And it kind of got me down. I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Is there some kind of...
Is it art imitating life or life imitating art?
I don't even know. Like a friend of mine told me when we did Can You Fly Live, which I'm going to do in sequence in Minneapolis the night
cool.
after the Barocco gig, actually. My departed friend Jake was like, oh man, I was crying. He's like, I realized you lived all those songs afterward. And I don't know, it's just... Nobody needs to cry about me. I'm just saying that that question about why the poignancy or the ability to go or the willingness to go deep on the sad images, it has changed, is because I can't. And I admit that really without feeling like a coward at all or anything.
It's like
there's some young person doing that now. I want them to do that, but I've got other things. Like one of my new songs is about a drummer being fired from a band.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great. It's great. I can actually do other things, you know.
Darling, it's a word that hides
another question I got to quickly ask, since we're here in the Driftless. It's what people here will be most interested in. And is it true that you sold some of your family farm to pay for Can You Fly?
It is. Yeah, it is true. And
they'll want to know how much you got for it.
Yes, I would say that, like, to the respectable agriculturalists listening to this, like, yes, I understand what a absolutely indefensibly stupid move it was to do that. I should have leveraged it for something, you know. But I sold it, and to make a goddamn indie record.
Yeah, but it's a great record.
And it's almost like, it's like Russian roulette. It's like, wow. It's like the deer hunters. Like, oh, I survived, you know. Because if that had failed, oh my Christ, you know, just it would have been so bad. So that did happen. Now the land is back in my cousin's hands.
Oh, that's,
you know,
it's good.
The family has it again.
Yeah.
And I have about a pound of it in a mason jar in my.
That's what you got left.
In my bedroom with a little N scale house and a tractor and a tree there just for kicks.
You know, you'd mentioned Amy being on that. She sings harmonies on that tune, Darlin'. Mm-hmm. And then also on that record, you have Susan Kausel and Susanna Hoffs. And I wondered, you know, again, thinking about process, you know, you have three different singers on three different songs on the same record. I'm just wondering, what was your thinking there? I mean, what were you like, Amy will be great on this, and Susan
honestly,
will be better,
you know,
on that?
I got to admit, it was kind of, you know, because I love my friends, it was kind of last minute.
Mm-hmm.
So people have asked me that, because like on Amy, the track that Amy's on, it's hard to hear her and stuff like this. But it's sort of like, oh, I want to have these guys on my record, because I love them, you know, I love their voices.
Yeah.
But it was sort of like doing an overdub. That's what it was like.
I see.
And that's the way that I think about it. It's like, oh, this needs this. But people really, thankfully, people really love the record, and I stand by the songs, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that one good thing to know is that since I own all my stuff, songs come back years later, and they can help you. But a song from Can You Fly could be used in some way, and all of a sudden, it's a payday. It happens. It's like lightning striking, but you got to be in it to win it. So if I keep making songs, maybe my heirs will benefit from some song. The story I always love is the Nina Simone story. She had her beautiful song, I Want to Be, is it I Want to Be? No, C'est Bon, C'est Bon.
Uh-huh.
And from 1959.
Okay.
And she's like, I was busting my ass on the road from then till 1985, until that Chanel commercial, and then I made $1 million.
Yeah.
But it's like, just, she's like, I was busting my ass, you know, so there you go.
You never know.
So that, and that's really, I love that.
Well, I know you have a tune, I know you did a number of, there's a bunch of songs that were used in movie soundtracks, including This Perfect World on Kingpin, right?
Oh, that was a big deal. Those songs were already in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When they hired me as the guy to write the score, which I must say I was in way over my head. But they put those songs in there, and people think that they're like, oh, great placement of your songs for you. He's like, I didn't do that. There's a bunch of, you know, so that's something I want to make clear for the record, because I might have done it, but I'm glad that they put the songs where they are. I love the experience, and I loved the fact that it's probably the thing that people know most about my music. You know, it's like it's been shown that thing is being shown somewhere right now.
Yeah,
it's always on. And
yeah. it's the other great bowling
movie.
It's
gotten me a lot of exposure.
That kind of leads me also to there's a project here that I really dig a lot. It's the Hobart Brothers with Little Sis Hobart.
Yeah. That experience was a one-of-a-kind thing. That record has really aged well.
I don't know how I found that record.
It really, like, we were all three going through objectively difficult times, which we all three made it through. And the record is always, I'm always going to love it. And the acoustic versions, which you can find on Spotify,
yeah,
some of them break
those.
My goddamn heart. You know, they still break my heart. And yeah. That was a beautiful time. I miss those guys.
Can you come get me at the Citgo by the airport? My heart may be broken and my battery is dead. I've got $14 and your picture in my wallet. And just for now, can we forget everything I said? Come get me with the cables and my jacket, 'cause I forgot it when I was walking out the door. No, not that one, it's the Citgo by the airport. Don't you remember, it's where we used to meet our friends. I am sorry, will you please come?
Interesting. I Am Sorry is my favorite song on that record. That's a great song.
What's that?
I Am Sorry. It occurred to me that it's kind of a companion piece in my brain to I Can Hear the Laughter.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's like another day in that guy's life.
Funny you would say that. funny you would say that. I have a friend who's a really big fan, really dear friend, and I Can Hear the Laughs is her. It's her favorite song, and I play it for I've played it on most gigs, and that's an example of a song that people just really have their own, they read into, and you know what I mean, it's their story.
Miles, I really love that.
Well, thanks, man.
Mm-hmm.
you can really fall. Wake up in a ruined house, wrapped up in a torn down curtain. And when I get to hell, will the lovely girls come down to the banks of that red, red river? I can hear the laughs when they find I've fallen down again. I can hear the laughs, and it hurts so bad I have to smile. You can take a lot, put back not a thing, still come home looking thinner. And when I get to Oz, will the lovely witch come down, kiss my pale bleeding brow? I can hear the laughs when they find I've fallen down again. I can hear the laughs, and it hurts so bad I have to smile.
Importance of this thing that I'm thankfully gifted then that I can do or have a tick or can't stop. The importance of people's lives is real, and in
Absolutely.
A way it's as strong as almost any other thing. Music, people need music and songs specifically, you know, to explain their lives to themselves. And I'm a lucky guy to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, don't take my advice, but I will. I'll try to explain the world to you.
Well, Freedy, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you today. I'm thanks a lot for giving us a little bit of your time here.
Great, Paul. I'm looking forward to it. I'll see you at the Fortney.
All right, man. Thanks, Freedy.
That's about all the time we're going to have for this Wednesday's edition of Pigtails Radio. I just want to thank you all for tuning in and for eavesdropping on my conversation with Freedy Johnston from earlier this week. I want to remind you all that Freedy is going to be playing at the Fortney again this Saturday at about 6 o'clock, from 6 to 7:30 in the evening. Swing by and check it out. He's really great. What did we hear while we were doing these, the stuff we played during the conversation? We started out with This Perfect World from the 1994 record of the same name. We also played off of that record, we played Bad Reputation, Evie's Tears, and late in the show, I Can Hear the Laughs. We also heard Underwater Life from Freedy's 1999 excellent Blue Days and Black Nights release produced by T-Bone Burnett. Also, we heard Responsible from Greedy's 1992 record, Can You Fly? We heard Darlin' from Back on the Road to You with special guest Amy Mann on that one. That's from his 2022 release. And we also heard I Am Sorry from the Hobart Brothers and Little Sis Hobart, which is Freddie's record with John D. Graham and Susan Cowsill, which came out in 2024. Speaking of Susan, that's what we're hearing in the background here. This is Susan Cowsill, a vocal from that same Hobart Brothers record. And that's what we're going to hear on the way out. I'll see you guys next Wednesday. Have a great weekend.